Hello and welcome to the Ratio Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Ray, and as always, we're coming to you from beautiful Athens, Georgia. And welcome, everyone. Welcome any new listeners to the kickoff of our ninth season. And yeah, 9 years. And I couldn't think of a better, cooler guest to have on than Mr. J. Grant Britton, one of the most amazing photographers who have ever strode the earth, and a absolute giant in skateboarding and skateboarding history. I can't understate what he means to the world of skateboarding. Growing up in a small southern college town and being a little skate rat that was harassed by the university cops and all that, Grant's photos were such a lifeline out to something cooler and something just brighter that was happening out on the West Coast. And in my life, I can't understand. I can't really thank him enough. So we'll have that talk coming up. And I want to thank Jason Thrasher, an amazing photographer in his own right, for setting up this interview and introducing me to Grant. Grant's got an excellent Jason story coming up in the interview, so I will leave it at that. But yeah, as I mentioned, this is the kickoff to our ninth season, and it's insane the people that we've had on. You know, from this point, we've had everybody from Kira to King Diamond, and we'd like to have a very diverse group of guests and artists who appear on the show, and it's been really amazing, you know, to say the least, who we've been able to speak with and work with. I remember playing my mother the first episode of this 9 years ago, or right before she passed, and she was super proud. So I hope she's you know, somewhere on the other side, swirling in the cosmos, you know, at least aware of some of the dust we're kicking up down here. So rest in peace, Mom, and thanks for turning me on to all the cool records and taking me to some cool shows and starting all this madness in my head in some way, shape, or another. But yeah, enough of all that mess. We're going to get to the episode proper, but there's just a few things I want to remind you all of. We got some friends out there that have new records out. The Pylon Reenactment Society. Their new record, Magnet Factory, is out, and they're going to be touring all up the East Coast this month later on. So head out to these shows and see one of the most amazing bands you can see in the world. And say hello to Vanessa and Jason and Kay and everybody after the show. You know, I'm sure they'd appreciate that. Also want to mention Tears for the Dying's new album, In the Shadow of the Midnight Sun, which is featured on one of our past podcasts. Adria was a kind guest. That is out, and they will also be touring. So make sure to go out and see those shows. And you couldn't see two better bands than these. They're not touring together, unfortunately. I'm sure that may happen someday. But yeah, make sure and check them out on these runs. And as far as the Ratio Podcast, man, we got so much exciting stuff coming up. We'll be at the Bad Religion Social Distortion show in Atlanta on April 30th, covering that. So if you're out, come up and say hello. And we'll be out in California shortly thereafter. We'll be out at the Cruel World Fest with Duran Duran and all that goodness. So can't wait to see our California friends. We have some really amazing guests lined up to record out there. So it's going to be more of a work trip than any type of vacation. But I'm sure me and Melinda will get in some time for rascalry at some point. But yes, and before we get to the episode, finally, I'd just like to thank our engineer all these 9 years and one hell of a human being, musician, artist, everything, father, just the coolest dude ever, Mr. Brent Duncan. He edits these for us and makes sure they sound good and are mastered out. So if you ever need help on a project like this or a record, hit up Mr. Brent or hit him up through the Ratio Podcast, and we'll get that information to him. Well, just want to get to our talk tonight, and here we go with Mr. J. Grant Britton. All right, everybody. Today on the podcast, we have an absolute legend, and I don't use that word often. So I am so honored to have Mr. Grant Britton on the show today. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm great, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Right on. Well, as you all know, Grant is the photographer guru of skateboarding, one of them, and was just such a viewpoint, you know, a view. He gave us a viewfinder into the cool when we were all coming up with his photos. So we just want to welcome him. And, you know, there's so many places we can begin. But first of all, I want to ask, you know, this is something that doesn't get discussed much with you. Did you start out surfing or skating when you were younger?
I started out skating in, I got a skateboard for Christmas when I was about 10 years old. And that was in, let's see, 1965, like in the first kind of skateboarding boom, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So when it was,
go ahead.
Sorry. So when it was more of like a novelty thought of it in that period rather than.
Yeah. You had skateboards and bikes and, you know, that was just, we just, you know, butt board down hills and race each other, you know, just straight down hills. And I mean, we're talking clay wheels and kind of a nondescript skateboard. It would have been like a department store skateboard, you know, but it had clay wheels. One of my neighbors had metal wheels, so we were one stage above metal wheels. So,
kind
of lucky. My brother and I, we're a year apart. One of my brothers and I are a year apart, so we both got skateboards. We always got the same identical gifts. So the first, you know, I think we got BB guns and walkie-talkies around the same time. And so we were riding around on our skateboards with BB guns and walkie-talkies.
I bet y'all were hell on wheels.
That's yeah, nuts. I lived out in the countryside, so you kind of did whatever you wanted back in those days.
Now, where were you raised at?
I was raised in Fallbrook, California, which is agricultural community. It was the avocado capital of the world, and so a lot of citrus, you know, groves, and I mean, we had avocados in our backyard, and surrounded by just brush and groves, pretty much.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
You're about 20 miles inland, so I didn't surf yet. I didn't start surfing till 1970, you know, when I was probably like 14 or so.
Well, did the skateboarding inform that? Like, you know, you hear about so many others that of the time.
Yeah. Well, I went to the movies one Saturday, and they showed Skater Dater, the movie.
Right.
And it was a short, and that was the first time I ever saw skateboarding, other than just my neighborhood, you know, friends, you know, riding around on our funky skateboards. And then we saw that and we were like, whoa, you can actually do tricks, you know? So then it looks like they're kind of surfing, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then I started surfing in 1970. I got my first surfboard, and then we just spent all our time trying to get rides to the beach. You know, we were in high school. We didn't have driver's licenses. I started surfing the year between eighth and ninth grade. So, you know, you didn't have a driver's license, and you try to make friends with older guys to see if you could get to the beach.
Right.
And, or we would, you know, a little later on, I started hitchhiking to the beach, and it would take you 2 hours to get to the beach, and you get stuck in nowhere. And, you know,
Then the waves are gone by the time you get there, or.
Yeah. And then my mom didn't know we were hitchhiking, and I got busted a couple of times hitchhiking. My sister would think on me, and then she saw me hitchhiking, and my mom would drive down through town, find me. She'd go, get in the car. and then she'd take me home and then make me walk back to town, you
Oh my
know.
gosh.
Yeah, my mom was good at that kind of those kind of lessons, you know.
Right. It is a
Yeah.
different world than people just
Yeah.
run, you know. Well, I want to kind of, you know, there's so much I want to get to with you, but you know, August, we're going to fast forward up to August 1978, and that's when the Del Mar Skate Ranch opens. How did
Right.
your connection, your employment and everything with that legendary spot begin?
Yeah. Well, I'd worked at a surf shop in Del Mar, that little town of Del Mar, and it's right on the beach. And then, but I lived next door to Wally Inouye, and the pro skater and skater for Castor. And he came over, you know, we started surfing together. And then he came over to my birthday party, and I think I was turning 23, 24, 23, I think. And he goes, "Hey, I just designed a park. Would you, I think I can get you a job there. Would you want to work there?" And I go, Yeah, that'd be rad. You know, and we were riding in ditches. Skate parks were around, but I didn't have a car, so I didn't really go to a lot of skate parks. And we just rode ditches and rode in alleyways and pretend like we were surfing and doing, you know, head dips under bushes and stuff. And we skated a few backyard pools. And so I went in and applied for a job, and I got the job because he and Eddie Conamy was the other guy he lived with, and Eddie Conamy was the manager of the park. So they got me a job there, and I went in on the first day, and I had just gotten back from Mexico surfing. I was like beet red from surfing, and my eyes were bloodshot. And you know, these are the days when I had long hair and a mustache, and the guy who was in charge of the whole place sent me home on the first day. He goes, "No, you don't need to work today." He thought I was stoned, so because I was so just out of it looking. You know, we had surfed for a few days in Mexico, and you know, Mexico's only an hour away from here, so I went back on the second day. So my official day of working was the second day they were open in 1978.
That's cooler than being there the first day. That's so
Yeah.
punk rock getting
Yeah.
sent home on the first day.
Yeah.
Now, did you get a chance to skate the park there at the beginning? Were you just like everybody else, just kind of blown away by what was going down?
No, I skated. They had banks, and you know, I was really into bank skating, and you know, I skated the pools too, but you know, I was never really that great. And then about 7 months into working there, you know, I had been watching all the photographers coming in, you know, from Skateboarder magazine and other magazines, and I go, "That's kind of cool." And I was an art major at the time, out at the junior college, Palomar College. And my friend, well, so my roommate had a Canon camera, and I go, "Hey, can I borrow your camera?" And I didn't even know how to use it. You know, I didn't even know how to put the film in. And my roommate put a roll of Kodachrome, you know, slide film in it. And I go, "What do you do?" He goes, "Well, focus it." And I could, you know, focus it. And then, like, "What are all these other dials for?" And he goes, "Well, just match the exposure needle, you know. You got to shoot a fast shutter speed, like 500th of a second, and then match the f-stop." And I go, "What's an f-stop?" And you know, I knew nothing. It was like caveman, you know, with fire, you know. And so I just kind of matched the needle, and then he said, "Well, and have the sun behind you, you know." And I go, "Okay." So shot a roll of Kyle Jensen, and he was a local skater at the time, probably one of the better amateur skaters at the park. And then I got the film developed. I had to send it in. You know, I had no money back in these days either, you know, just to get a roll of film and then send it in to get developed, you know, was
Right.
like kind of an expense, a big expense for me.
And you
So
don't know what you're getting. So like now, I mean, we'll get more into this, but it's got to be, you know, incredibly frustrating, I guess, but you know, you're just kind of, you know, sailing along in this and learning as you go, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. So I get that first rollback and there's like two, you know, I'm holding the slides up against the sun, you know, looking at them, and I have no magnifier or anything, you know, and I'm just like, wow, they look pretty good. And I got a couple of photos that were, I guess, in focus. And then I got another roll of film, and I got another roll of film. And I was just kind of using any extra money, you know, that wasn't food money or rent money for photography. And then I figured out that black and white was cheaper, but I had no way I'd get it developed, and I'd just be looking at these negatives, you know. And you know, I was giving away photos, you know, I was giving away slides to people. Hey, you want a slide? You know, so I'm getting stuff back from people go, hey, you gave me these slides back in the early 80s. Do you want them back? And I go, yeah, I'll scan them. So yeah, apparently I was just giving stuff away, you know, because I didn't have anything to do with them. And then, so in about 81, so I was shooting for about a year and a half, and then 81, Sonny Miller, who was a local skater and a photographer, became a cinematographer. He's passed away in the last, you know, probably 8 years ago or so. But he asked if I wanted to go into the dark room at Palomar College and print one of my photos. So I, you know, showed up the next day, printed something. When it came up in the developer, I just went, oh my God, this is, I mean, it was one of those light bulb moments, you know, when you figure out that, you know, cause it was art, but it was like immediate and it was just cool. You know, it was like alchemy and, you know, science and everything just mixed all together. And then the next day I changed, it was right at the beginning of the semester. I had three art classes and I dropped all my art classes and enrolled in three photography classes.
That's fantastic. And then
it just, you know, just grew from there. And I was still working at the park and yeah. But I was at Palomar. I was in the dark room from the time they'd open in the morning till I had to go to work at the skate park in the afternoon. So
I started
hanging out with other kinds of photographers too at the school. You know, there were all these little groups. There were, you know, the surf photographer group, surfers and skate photographers, and there were the boudoir and fashion photographers and landscape photographers. But I got to know all these different people, and I just took every photo class I could take because I wanted to get, you know, good at doing everything.
Was this more for you to, now were you planning to go further into photography, or was this just to document what was going on at Del Mar?
No, because I wasn't really, you didn't think of it as documentation then. You were just shooting your friends, and I was working at the park, so I was there all the time. Some pro would come in, and eventually I became the manager of the pro shop. And so I kind of ran the place. And then I'd go, hey, so-and-so's here. I'm going to sneak out and shoot some photos. So, you know, I'd be at work, but I'd be out there shooting photos too. And then we had a wall in the, like a wooden, you know, shitty little wall in, by the snack bar, and we'd put up our skate photos. And, you know, I didn't have a magazine. You know, I'd sent stuff to Action Now magazine and got it rejected. And that just makes you get better, you know.
Yeah.
Rejection helps a lot, you know. You just can't be a crybaby about it and give up. You just keep doing it, and well, I'll do better. And I was just learning by looking at the magazines and figuring out what was going on, you know.
Yeah, and so Skateboarder's really the only magazine that's got any coverage of it at the time.
Yeah, Skateboarder, and then it turned into Action Now, and it got all watered down. You know, I mean, they had a cover of someone on horseback jumping over a rock, you know, on the cover. Yeah, and it just got, and they started trying to, you know, it was actually a predecessor to what happened 20 years later with like Stance magazine that Transworld put out, where it was action, it was music, it was fashion, it was, you know, it was art, you know. So they were kind of ahead of their times, but it was so weak that, you know, and it made all the skaters mad, you know, that they would bail on skateboarding. So then Thrasher, they went out and skateboarder or Action Now went under in like, I don't know, 80. And all the photographers that had been shooting skating left and went into, you know, motocross and BMX and surfing. And they kind of just left skateboarding because there's no way to make any money at it. Because, you know, skateboarding had died by then. And so then Thrasher started up in 81. I started sending them photos and they printed a few. When they needed somebody, you know, a skater from, you know, down in San Diego, they would, you know, ask for photos. But I probably had maybe six photos in Thrasher over a couple of years. And then in 83, when I was still working at the park, Larry Balma, who owned Tracker Trucks, came in one day and he knew me and that he had seen some of my photos and he wanted to know if I wanted to work on a newsletter they were doing. And then a couple months later, he called me and wanted me to check out the newsletter. So I went up to Oceanside, saw this magazine laid out on the wall. You know, this is before computers and everything. So everything was done by hand. And I realized they were working on a magazine. And then I just started working on the magazine. And I started doing all the darkroom work, you know, out at the college, you know, and printing the pictures for the magazine. And yeah, and then I was the photo editor for 20 years. And that's my story. Goodbye.
Well, yeah. It was, you know, I was going to get to Larry, Larry Balma and Tracker, you know, getting this together. And you know, looking before we get off Del Mar, what was I always loved your pictures that were taken at night there, you know, and how late did that place stay open?
Well, they stayed open till 11 o'clock every night. Even when skateboarding was dead, they were open till 11.
That's
there'd
amazing.
Be two people. There'd be two people skating unless it was raining or got so foggy that the cement got slick because you're near the beach. And yeah, they'd keep it open till 11, 7 days a week.
And you got so many of those wonderful golden hour sunset kind of photos. And it really painted a picture to us back on the East Coast. And that's kind of like, what did Larry Balma, did he see those photos and was like, hey, I need to get involved with this guy?
I think he was just hard up to find anybody like down in San Diego that would, you know, work. I mean, it was a lot of us were just okay. The first staff we had, it was, you know, Neil Blender and Lance Mountain, you know, they shot photos and Marty Jimenez and Britt Parrott and GSD and everybody did art or photos or wrote. And some people did, you know, all of them. So he was just trying to get a crew together to work on the magazine. Nobody knew how to make magazines. We had a guy doing the scans, the halftones and all that. And it was really like just, you know, flying by the seat of your pants. You know, you didn't know how to do anything. And we just kind of learned along the way.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, you know, learning, did you take any business classes?
Oh, hell no. No, I worked in a surf shop and I worked in the skate shop and then I worked in restaurants. You worked in restaurants back then, so you would at least get one good meal a day, you know?
Right.
So, well, yeah, I just did, you know, odd jobs and I did art jobs. I did cartooning and did business cards and things like that, but nobody would pay you. And oh, it was just, you know, I was living off, there was a time when I didn't have work and I was living off my, my grandmother. When I'd get really bad, I'd call her and go, I don't have any food. and then she'd come up and take me shopping, you know, for some, you know, I only did that a few times, but, yeah, I was eating oranges off the tree next door and Campbell's soup, you know, so.
Right. And you know, I guess that's, you know, one thing that I want to get into with that. What was the relationship like between Transworld and Thrasher?
Well,
or the
they
dynamic?
They had been going for 2 years before we started, and there was already a rivalry, you know, between Indy and Tracker. Indy was owned by Fausto, and he owned Thrasher. So, and then Larry started up a magazine, and it was kind of as a response to some things. They wanted something a little more parent-friendly, Transworld did. And so, well, it was Peggy and Larry. They were just bummed on, you know, it was probably the boobs with the Indy stickers on them and the partying and stuff like that. So they wanted to come out with a magazine that was more clean cut. Me, I didn't care, you know. But Transworld, when they started, you know, at first it was so bad, you know, the goody-goody thing. I was like, oh, I don't want to work on this. But then it's the only game in town, you know. Thrasher wasn't using my stuff. I mean, I'm on the ground floor of something. Yeah. So, you know, it was like, what else are you going to do? You're down in San Diego, and there's San Francisco and L.A. And in San Diego are the hotbeds of skating, you know, on the West Coast. And, you know, just that I was able to get, God, my name on a photo, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That was like a big thing back then. Excuse me. You get a photo in a magazine or whatever, and then you wouldn't get any photo credit, and you're like, and you wouldn't get paid. So, you know, this was like, you'd see your name and, you know, you're in the mass quiet. That's my dog.
Getting back to kind of, you know, the dynamic between Thrasher and Transworld. Was there much competition with other photographers of the time?
Well, I would go up. See, what was funny was they had to deal with me because I also ran the skate park. So, you know, people would come from, you know, NorCal, and, you know, I was known as, oh, that's Grant that works at the skate park, you know. And then I started shooting photos. And that just opened up a whole new thing for me where I wasn't just Grant that worked at the skate park and would kick people out and stuff or clean up barf or whatever, or call the ambulance when somebody fell. Yeah, it was, I'd go to Northern California and I'd get that. Oh, they're from this. They'd always refer to us as the slick, glossy magazine. Like it was a bad thing, you know, and as a photographer, I was just like, wow, hers looks, it looks pretty good. You know, it looks better on slick, glossy paper. So, but I became, you know, I already knew a lot of people up there. So I, you know, I knew Mofo and from Thrasher and Bryce Knights, and they actually became friends of mine. You know, for a while it was a little competitive. I got kicked out of Thrasher once by Fausto. I was just visiting and Fausto walked in and said, what's he doing here? And they go, well, you better leave. And then I shot a ramp that belonged to Bryce up there. And I think Thrasher had paid for it or whatever. And I shot photos. And then I got a call later that from one of those guys saying, hey, you can't use those photos, you know, because you know, Thrasher didn't want you to use them. So yeah, there was a rivalry and we were total competitors.
Right.
And then we got really big too. You know, for a while we were just this tiny thing. And then after a while we were, you know, financially we were rivals too.
So. Yeah. Well, there was so much content.
I've got to be more and more friends, you know, with the other guys too. You know, you're rivals, but you're, you know, Mofo and I actually started working together at contests. He'd go, because there were other photographers coming in from the outside and they're up on the decks of the ramp. And then he's like, hey, let's not shoot on the same side of the ramp anymore. We'll switch off halfway through the contest. So we kind of started working together like that because we didn't want to be shooting the same shots, you know?
Yeah.
Being on the same side of the ramp. So, no, and now we're really good friends, you know.
Well, shooting ramps and pools, have you ever been injured shooting skaters?
Yeah. Yeah. You get hit. I mean, that's just part of it, you know.
You're right there.
Yeah, you get hit in the head or the face now and then, or you I think one of my, what my right arm, wait, my camera's, my left arm is my blocking arm, where I'm blocking boards with my left arm, and because I'm right-handed shooting. And yeah, so you get hit, you get a shinner now and then, but it's not as bad as what the skater's getting,
Right.
you
Oh,
know. I'm going to be able to walk, I had the easy job.
what was it like when you when you know, there's this huge shift towards street skating? Did that kind of did that affect your technique in any way, or how you approached it?
Well, I just took what I knew from vert, because I learned on vert skating, that's how I learned photography, because that's what everybody did. And then when street skating, they started bulldozing all the parks, and so people built, skaters, they're not going to give up skating because somebody's not building parks, they go back to, building ramps in the backyard and going out in the streets and, doing slappies and on curbs and maybe jumping off a few things. But I just treated it like it was vert skating, and I just adapted it to street skating. The angles are pretty much the same. It started to change big time when, people like Nadas and Gans are skating rails,
Oh, yeah.
but you just figured out the angles. You shoot, you're at the bottom of the stairs or the top of the stairs, or with a fisheye, or you're with a long lens and you get the whole rail in. And I really got into, you got to show the takeoff, the actual, action, and then the landing to show the whole story. A lot of kids, when they start out, they'll crop so much. It's a guy on the rail, but you can't see how long the rail is. You can't see how tall the rail is. You got to tell the whole story, in one photo.
Oh yeah, and I
So,
remember you shooting sequences, because
yeah.
we were using those to try and learn the tricks. How hard
Yeah.
was that to get right?
Well, the big thing is the expense, of just shooting. I had a 20 roll rule usually, but you'd be trying to shoot, especially in the 90s when it was all technical, skating got, flip in, flip out, tricks, and the tricks were so difficult, people would bail them so much. But hey, can you hear my dog chewing
No,
right now?
it's fine.
Okay, good. He's chewing on this plastic toy. It was just so wasteful, of film, and the expenses, the magazine was paying for it, and we would send film to other photographers, around the world, and people would try to get one trick and waste 10 rolls of film,
Yeah.
So
So
yeah,
the
it wasn't a creative thing. That was the documentation, because you wanted to document that, yeah, the person made it. He's not just going up and bailing, and you had to show documentation of it. But it wasn't creative at all. I prefer to take those sunset photos, like at Del Mar.
Yeah,
Or
yeah.
even now, what I do now,
Well, so moving to digital, were you, I guess I'm assuming you were in favor of that.
Yeah, because I was a photo editor and I was trying to, yeah, okay, like a sequence. Well, at first we had moved into shooting medium format for stills. Everybody was shooting Hasselblads. So we all had to get Hasselblads because Atiba Jefferson started shooting Hasselblad, and then everybody else, I got to get a Hasselblad. And then just the fisheye for that is 4 to 6 grand, So, so we were shooting for stills. We would use the Hasselblad. Almost everybody quit using 35 millimeter during that time, except for digital sequences. And, I think the cameras were only 4 megapixels or whatever, but sequences are only, they're so tiny anyway, so they worked. And that just made it so much easier and so much cheaper. I mean, it was amazing. And I think I was the second skate photographer to get into digital. There was a Brazilian guy, Daniel Borki, that was shooting digital. And it's okay, don't do that. He's doing that rubbing his butt on the carpet thing.
Well, that's perfect. I've got that. See, that's on my podcast. That's amazing.
Oh, quiet,
Hey,
quiet.
there's our new star.
Yeah. Here, chew on that.
What's his name?
Yeah. Arlo.
Arlo, welcome to the Ratio
Oh,
Podcast.
thanks. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, his name's Arlo Referee.
That's amazing. See, everybody that just heard that's having a much better day now,
All right,
just hearing
good.
that name.
I'm trying to get rid of him. I'm trying to get him interested in something else right now. You know, I'll let him outside. 'Cause he can bake in the sun and then he's totally happy.
Oh yeah, that's like ours.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. He's there.
Cool.
What were we talking about? Oh, digital in the sequences. So yeah, it was, I got into it right away, you know, and I wasn't worried. You know, people were like, well, it doesn't look like film. And then they would tweak it in Photoshop. And then I go, well, it definitely doesn't look like film now, you know, because they were like desaturating stuff. And
Right.
yeah, and it was just too much. It was overkill. But yeah, I just use it. It's a tool, you know, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I mean, besides the, you know, you're the people that are totally into the like analog and stuff, you know, for magazines, you know, I'd get into arguments with kids, you know, photographers that are in their 20s, and I'm trying to talk them into using digital. I'm the oldest skateboard photographer, and I'm trying to talk them into it, and I go, you know what, it's all digital in the end, you know, by the time it's in the magazine, it's digital.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I just, and then essentially everybody was shooting their sequences on digital, and lots of times it would just be raw digital right out of the camera, and then we would have to fix them up. And but I shot full pagers and center spreads on digital even back then, you know.
Right.
And
Well,
then when we left Trans World, we started the skateboard mag. And we changed the size of the magazine, the format of the magazine, so that Hasselblad would fit better because we were all using, for stills, we were using the square format, you
right.
know? So we made the magazine wider so it would fit better. And yeah, and then digital got better and better and better. And then everybody just went over to digital. And that was, you know, now you do film to be different.
And it's pretty much the same result in some cases, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing with film, it's the importance it has. I mean, it looks great, but the importance it has, it's more of a craft now, you know, where somebody took the time to shoot film and then make a print, and you know, there's just all that.
Well, Del Mar, let's get back to it. Everything comes back to Del Mar. Del Mar closes down. What was that like for you when all these the parks started going, a place you've invested so much time and your creative energy?
Yeah. Well, I quit working at Del Mar in 84. They closed down in 87, but I was still there all the time. You know, that was our home park. And, you know, my assistant manager, Chip Morton, took over as the manager. And then there were a few other managers. And then they hired a non-skate manager. And yeah, and it got really bad then because the guy didn't understand, you know, what was going on. And, so they closed. They wanted to build a Hilton, I think, there on that property next to it, because that property was a big sport. There was a tennis club and a driving range and a miniature golf course, and there was a trailer park. So where the trailer park was, they bulldozed that and put in a Hilton, and they didn't want to deal with skateboarders anymore, so they just closed it down. They jackhammered it, and it was. I think I was on a trip, and I Todd Swank, my assistant, called me and he goes, oh, they just they bulldozed Del Mar, and I'm like, oh no, you know, it kept closing down and then reopening, and then finally it closed and they jackhammered it. And so I got off the plane and I went straight to Del Mar and just saw it totally. It's just a rubble of, you know, a rubble cement field. So, and but everybody just started building stuff. There were, you know, and then Tony Hawk moved out to Fallbrook and built his ramp, and there was another Fallbrook ramp. People were going inland because they could get land cheaper
Right.
and you know, away from the coast. Yeah, it's just skaters just made do. You know, you're not going to get rid of skateboarding just because you bulldoze everything.
Right,
So,
right.
and then Upland got bulldozed. Del Mar got bulldozed, and then Upland got bulldozed after that. So,
Oh, God.
and those were the last skate parks in Southern California.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
The end
But
of it is.
we just made do. There's then street skating came up, and I was going to LA all the time and shooting in San Diego, and I was going up and, you know, hanging with Gons and Nodis, and then going up to San Francisco and shooting with Tommy Guerrero, and you know, and then, you know, I was traveling too. So
Right.
probably once a month I was going to a contest, you know, flying somewhere and then going overseas. Started to go overseas in 85. I went to Europe for the first time for a month and a half. Went by myself and just met up with people over there and just took trains everywhere and stayed at people's houses and you know, get a car ride to Germany from Amsterdam and take a train to Sweden, and you know, went to the Swedish summer camp and the French summer camp and made a lot of friends. People had stayed at my house in when I lived in, you know, Cardiff, Leucadia, Encinitas, and then you hit them up and you stay at their house in Europe. So
Oh
it
man.
was really cool. We were all a big family, you know.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
And then they wanted to get their picture in the magazine. So even if they hated me, they still wanted a photo in the magazine.
Well, you know, it sounds like you've been able to live this amazing life and travel, and that's got to be, you know, when you look at something like skateboarding giving you that. You know, it's such for all you've given to the sport, to toot your horn, sir. It's amazing to see stuff like that come back and have those experiences. But
Yeah,
when we
but
met, go ahead.
you know, I always say this, but I was in the right place at the right time. You know, if it
Yeah.
hadn't been for, you know, living next door to Wally in a way, or me surfing and getting out of high school and then moving to the beach and then living next to this pro skater, and then he just happened to be, you know, designing Del Mar Skate Ranch. And then my roommate having a camera, you know, it's just, you know, it's all those accidents in life, you know, that everybody has, you know, and you're just in the right place at the right time. You know, you have no talent in the beginning, and then you just work hard at something, and then you get better and better and better. You don't give up when somebody tells you suck, and you just stick with it, you know, and sometimes things happen. You know,
Absolutely.
yeah.
Well, the real you know, I hope this is the first of many. Your book Push, which has been released, it's 80s skateboarding photography, and let me just tell you, it is a sight to behold. So can you tell me how this all came together?
Well, thanks. Well, originally, no, I, you know, every photographer wants to do a book. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just something a photographer, you know, every photographer I know, even non-skate people, they go, oh, I want to do a book. They're always working on a book. And a book might take years. You know, you got a box of photos or you got a garage full of photos, and that's what I have. And so I finally, a guy I knew approached me and he had done a few other books. I probably won't mention any names. And he wanted to do a book, so we worked on a book for 2 years, and then after 2 years he kind of bailed on it. And but I pretty much had a book done, and I'd been working with my friend Josh Higgins, who's a designer, I mean, he worked on both Obama campaigns and worked at Facebook. And I mean, he did a show of mine in San Diego in 2003. And we had talked about doing a book in 2003. I go, yeah. And he really wanted to do it. And so I just held other designers wanted to do a book with me. And I just said, well, I've already promised it to Josh Higgins. And he was in the band Fluff.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the bass player in Fluff with O.
And, yeah.
And so I kept it for him till, 2019 when we started working on this. And so he came up with a kind of a designed a basic layout, what we wanted. And so we were almost ready to finish the layout and go to print. And it was going to be the person who was doing it. He was going to self-fund it because he'd already done some other books. And then he bailed like during COVID. I think he got cold feet during COVID, and like a lot of people, just, everybody's lives are, upended. And so he bailed on it. And then the next week I wrote an email to somebody I knew at Ginkgo Press, and he had left Ginkgo Press. And then I actually emailed him to see if there was somebody that I could, contact there. And he goes, hey, you're in luck. I just came back to Ginkgo. He had been working on some other projects. And so I sent him the mock-ups of the book, and he took it to a meeting the next week, and they go, yeah, we'll publish your book. And so then they hired somebody a designer to go in and do all the final designs and pull in all the captions and things like that, really get it ready for press. And so it got printed at the very end of 2020 and released in the beginning of 2021. And they did 4,000 copies. They've sold through those, and they're on their second printing. And of another 4,000, they've got a few hundred left. So now we're talking about a third printing.
Well,
we had been talking about, when I was with the previous person who's going to, print the book, we were going to do a 40-year kind of retrospect. And then once we got into it, we go, there's too many photos. And I had some weak areas where, once I had kids, I quit traveling as much, and I kind of just shot around San Diego and shot a lot of locals and shot a few events. But it wasn't, there were a couple of periods in, those 40 years that it was a little redundant, so we just decided to do the 80s because there were so many 80s photos,
Oh, yeah.
And to me, that's like the golden age of skate photography, and skateboarding.
It really is. And
yeah.
How does it feel to flip? How does it feel emotionally to go down this journey if you flip to pick up this book and flip through it for you?
Well, I use it to look up years. When somebody asks me, hey, when was that photo taken? And then I look in the book if it's in there, and I go, oh, yeah, it's 88 or 87. Because it was kind of like just a blur to me, like I'll look at the dates. Well, what's great with having all these analog photos, too, is that I have this slide is imprinted with the date or the negatives. I wrote the year on it, so, and the month sometimes. So I'm able to look back at all that stuff and for future, projects and things like that. So no, it really, those were like the best of times for me. I mean, when we're talking around 83, I moved into the skate park and lived on the pool table for 8 months, to save money. I broke up with my girlfriend at the time. I moved all my stuff into the back room where all the Cokes and everything were stored. And there was a shower there, over at the trailer park, and I'd go to Denny's to eat or the coffee place down the street to eat, and I lived on this pool table for 8 months, slept there every night and did night security at the skate park because people would break in and try to steal everything up out of the pro shop.
Oh my
so
God.
We always had, so for years we had somebody, usually a skater, would be staying there, at night, when we close at 11, and then he'd get up, and when we'd open at like 9 or 10 in the morning, and then the guy would move all his stuff and put the cue sticks back. And but yeah, it was like I was living the life, and then during the day I was going to the college and working, or later on to Trans World and working and sleeping on this pool table.
Yeah, well, now did y'all get hassled by the cops out there a lot? Was there, it's younger kids, so was there any drinking, pot smoking, stuff like that that was like drawing attention, or was it just skating and stuff?
Where, at the skate park?
At the skate park.
Yeah, the parking lot, things would happen. I was like, people would bring their kids there and drop them off at 9 in the morning and pick them up at 6 at night, so I always tried to keep it kind of clean. I tried to keep it as a safe space, for kids to come to. I mean, I'd work on Christmas Day or Thanksgiving Day because I made up the schedule, and I felt bad if I scheduled somebody to work on a holiday. So I would just work, and then moms would bring me like Thanksgiving dinner and stuff at the skate park, and if a kid didn't have money to skate, I would give them a trash bag, go pick up trash and get a free skate session. So, people could trade gear, like the pros to make it okay with my boss, the pros would bring a board a month in a deck that they were getting for free. And that would give them a month worth of skating, but it was, we're talking $3 to skate for 2 hours or $5 all day, so it wasn't expensive to skate. And but I tried to make it a kid friendly place and family friendly place, and they kept the party into outside, or everybody would meet up at the skate park. It was like the clubhouse, they'd meet up and then they'd go to a show or go to the movies or go skate somewhere else. So it was, skate parks were a lot different back then than probably they are now,
Yeah. I mean, the world's so different now,
Yeah. They were the Mecca. Del Mar was a Mecca, for skateboarding,
Oh,
it was
absolutely.
A gathering place. Everybody would travel from, the East Coast or Europe or Japan or Australia, and they would, there were people sleeping in the parking lot back then. Skaters would buy some old shitty car and live in it. My friend Dave Mock from Australia lived in his Plymouth Duster out in the parking lot.
Damn.
For probably 6 months, Yeah. But they were in heaven. You got an 18-year-old guy and he's just his first big trip and he's sleeping at Del Mar in the parking lot. He's stoked.
Skating the keyhole the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, God almighty, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. You become a local, Right away you're a local.
Yeah. I get chills when I think of how important the scene was, the exchange of ideas, the exchange of artistic ideas. I mean, it really just, I don't know, fills my spirit when I think back on it. And we were talking when you were here in Athens, a little bit back. Why do you feel, there's obvious reasons, but why do you feel so many people that came out of that scene went in and led artistic lives, got involved in the arts, and seemed to look 20 years younger than people their same age? Do you think it's just staying close to something that meant so much to you in your youth, or you just think it's a lifelong journey?
Well, skating, it is an art form. It's not only a sport or a lifestyle or whatever. It's an art form, and I think that people that skate are creative, they've got that creative, spark in them. And so you had a lot of these skaters, and maybe because of skateboarding, they got into art, or vice versa. You know, they just have these art brains where, you know, skating's just so you can do it by yourself. You don't need a team. You don't need, I mean, now you don't even need a skate park. You can just ride out your front door, you know, and it's just this creative thing. You spend hours by yourself sometimes, and you're just, I mean, think of somebody like Rodney Mullen, who, you know, his
Yeah.
parents didn't really want him to skate, and he lives like, you know, he skated in a garage, you know, space for years, you know, and invented all these crazy tricks. He was by himself a lot,
Right.
you know.
Didn't he skate in the
And
middle of the night too? A
yeah,
lot?
I think
Yeah.
so. He still does. He still does. I've met up with him at Dwindle Distribution, and I shot photos of him a couple times at nighttime at the factory when nobody's there, and he's just got skating down the aisles, and you know, and he's all by himself skating, you know. Or he would be on a tour, and you know, Tony and Stacy and people like that are saying, yeah, he would just disappear, and he'd go out and skate at 2 in the morning. He'd find some covered garage if the weather was bad, and you know, a car park or whatever, and skate, you know. But I think it's that whole creative mind thing, and you know, the reason I got into skating and surfing was I could do it by myself. I wasn't a big guy, you know. I couldn't play on a team. I was crappy at every sport pretty much, and I was good at surfing, and I was good at, you know, okay at skating. And you don't even have to be okay at skating to have a great time,
Absolutely.
but you, just the whole creative thing, you know. There's so many artists and musicians and guys in fashion, and people follow skateboarding, you know,
Yeah.
because it's cool. It's cool as shit, you know.
It's such a crossroads of so many things, you know,
Yeah.
coming together at once. And
And
I
then jocks beat up on us, you know.
Oh yeah.
We get bullied by jocks, so immediately you have this other gang, you know, of skaters. You know, you see somebody back in those days, you'd see somebody with Vans or Airwalks, and you knew, oh, that guy's a skater. Oh, we have something in common, and you'd go up and talk to him.
Right
You know,
on.
I mean, I was in Japan. I've been to Japan a few times, but I took my son when he was 20. I took him to Japan with me to help me with the show I was doing. And I'm walking around Tokyo, or no, I think it was Yokohama, and I see a skater coming down the hill, and my son's riding toward him, and they just kind of slap five and they keep riding.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it's so amazing to see this, you know, bond that, you know, skaters, you know, no matter where you are in the world, no matter what language or what race or anything, you have this bond with I'm getting verklempt. But you do have this bond with somebody you don't know, you know,
Yeah.
just through skateboarding, you know.
Well, just a couple of more questions. You've been so nice to give your time to us
No worries.
today. And I want to get just I'm going to go down some names here and just give me some impressions or something, if you have any good anecdotes or anything. And let's just start out. Christian Hosoi.
Wow. One of the best styles ever in skateboarding. You know, he came out of an era. I mean, he was a kid. He came out of Marina Skate Park, but he was probably, after Alva, he was probably the next rock star of skateboarding, you know, but just never, I mean, so easy to shoot photos of, and just has that killer kind of surf style, you know. Just super fluid, and you know, high airs, and really easy to take pictures of.
Right, those airs were just
It's and
amazing.
and still a good friend, you know.
Oh yeah, I still follow him. I mean, he's still out there ripping it up. Just amazing.
Totally. Yeah.
How about Neil Blender?
Well, that's one of those art guys, those guys with a different kind of mind, you know, doing, you know, art. I mean, I worked with him from the beginning of Transworld, and that's when we would run a lot of cartoons in the magazine. And I mean, they were just drawing funny pictures and we were putting them in the magazine. But yeah, he's still one of those super creative guys, and he just has a different, he's just got a different way of thinking. You know, he's kind of like, I'm not going to say he's on the spectrum, but he's like out on the edge somewhere, you know, and just did his own thing. And then everybody wanted to copy him.
He was so unique, you know. And the artwork just kind of pulled into everything. And you know, speaking of artists, how about Gans?
Another guy just inventing. I mean, he pretty much, he and a couple other people, you know, just took to the streets and made up a whole new genre of skateboarding. You know, I mean, it came out of the basics of the 70s, but then they took it three-dimensionally onto handrails and architecture, you know, and they just, you know, he's from LA or Montebello or one of those places, and just they just used their environment and thought up, you know, new ways to skate. And then is one of the probably best skaters that whoever lived, you know, and can ride vert too.
Right.
So, and just, I think what he was, what he came up with was this kind of, he might have been one, he and Lance and people like that, I think fingerboarding and stuff like that and cartooning or whatever. They go, hey, let's try this. They don't know if they can do it, but then they try it, you know. So, yeah, but he's still like that. He's creative and he's, you know, still, they're oddballs kind of, you know.
Well, how about Tommy Guerrero?
Well, his music thing, you know, he's one of another one of those guys that are just, you know, great musician and a thinker. I mean, he brought up San Francisco. I mean, he's probably one of the most famous skaters who ever came out of San Francisco, and you know, street skater, smooth style. I met him at Del Mar. He would come down with everybody, and they'd sleep either in the parking lot or in the highball games there. They had highball, this trampoline game, and they'd sleep in there, and so, and then I'd go up and shoot. One of my most productive shoots ever, I spent a couple of days in San Francisco and probably got eight good photos of him and his friends, you know, Jim Thiebaud and Orb and Julian Stranger and all these other rad skaters.
Fucking
But
legends, man.
and then I'm still friends with him, and I when he plays down here, I go and watch him play at this local place in San Diego.
Well, yeah, I hope he gets out to the East Coast sometime. We've been wanting to get him on this podcast because he's such a, you know, it kind of encompasses what I was talking to you about. Just so many talented people just displaying so many various talents. And I feel like skateboarding was really kind of a catalyst for a lot of this. And one
True.
last one on that. A friend of yours and someone that I think you've been shooting is pretty much his whole career, and that's Tony Hawk.
Well, Tony, when they bulldozed Oasis Skate Park, he was a local there, and then his dad started bringing him up to Del Mar. And then I remember him, you know, somebody saying, oh, this kid Tony Hawk's out there, he's from San Diego. And then he ended up moving, his family moved to Cardiff, which is only, you know, a few miles from Del Mar, probably like 3, 4 miles from Del Mar. And he just got better and better over time. He became a local there, and then he was the ruler of that pool, pretty much the keyhole. And that pool, you know, the photos did it a lot of justice because it wasn't very good. You know, there were a lot of problems with it. People would come from other skate parks, like the Upland guys would come down for a contest, and they hated that pool.
Really?
And then, yeah, and then the Del Mar guys would go to Upland and they were afraid of it. You know, it's like just the gnarliest pool that
Just
ever
so much
existed,
vert,
probably.
right? How
Yeah,
much?
so much vert. But Del Mar was pretty easy to ride once you got used to it. But Tony, I've just been, he wrote the intro in my book, and he talks about our careers kind of coinciding, where, you know, I built up my photography career, and then he became a skater, and I was shooting photos of him and putting them in the magazine. So we just, you know, I've always, he's one of the best skaters who's ever lived, you know.
Absolutely.
And done the most for the sport of skateboarding and for building skate parks. And, you know, he's just really done a lot for skateboarding. And, you know, there were haters, you know, that they made fun of his style or whatever, but man, he's still doing it, you know, in his late 50s. And I mean, it's pretty incredible what he's done. And he's a good businessman. And, you know, I was friends with his parents, and I'm friends with his siblings, and, you know, they're just, you know, they were a great family, and they all did a lot for skateboarding.
Yeah, just watching him continue to push it, like you said, and through injuries and everything, yeah. It's so inspiring, you know.
Well, the guy breaks his femur.
Oh God!
And then starts skating too, you know, fast again, and then has to get reoperated on, and now he's doing things where, like, he's driven. You know, there's definitely something wrong with him. You know. I mean, he just pushes himself so much. You know, he's always trying to prove something to himself. I don't think he has anything to prove, but he's an amazing skater and an amazing person.
You mentioned the haters, you know, in the 80s and everything. He's one of the only examples of I saw all of those people that were talking shit about him come around. I mean, almost 100%. You know, like, this is undeniable, you know, and he's such an important figure to skateboarding. Yeah.
Well, and he brought skateboarding up to the point where pros could make money too.
Mm-hmm.
He helped with that. So he's helped everybody. And, you know, people always, like, had Christian and him as, you know, competitors, but they were friends back then, and they're super good friends now. And, you know, there was the whole North Cal, you know, no, North NorCal and SoCal rivalry going on, and a lot of that was, you know, the skaters themselves didn't really care about all that.
Yeah,
you know, I think it was magazines and maybe the industry pushing that whole deal, but that made it kind of cool too.
Yeah, know? Yeah,
yeah. You got to have rivalries.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, so with one last thing about Tony, like, you shot out there when they did that animal chin ramp, which, you know, when we all back in on the East Coast see this ramp, we're like, God Almighty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What were your impressions of seeing that and shooting out there?
Yeah. Well, I was so stoked because Stacy, I guess it was Stacy or George Powell, they kind of split up the whole making of that video with the two magazines, Thrasher and Transworld. And Transworld, I got the chin ramp. And Mofo got Hawaii and Pink Motel and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And but I was stoked to get, you know, chin ramp. And it was only there for a week, you know, and it was no permits. Somebody from the city or showed up and goes, "What are you guys doing?" And they were like, "Oh, we're just shooting a video and it'll be down in a couple of days." And, you know, we're talking, there's like a building built out in the middle of this field. And there were these beehive looking things on the property. There were these white boxes. And the guy goes, "Well, these are an endangered snail that live here." And they had built on this, you know, property. You couldn't get away with it now. You know?
Oh, no.
And then it was gone. They were done with the video, and some of the wood went to, I think, Tony for a ramp, and then which ended up at Transworld. A lot of the wood ended up after Tony's ramp, ended up as some, like, they built all these loft offices and things and walls and partitions out of, I think it was originally Tony's ramp, and some of that was might have been chin ramps. So they just repurposed it for Transworld architecture.
Nice.
Yeah. But yeah, it was great shooting that because you're like, again, you weren't like, "I'm shooting this, it's for now." I was just trying to get good photos for the magazine. You know, I was just stoked on it for that. And then you're not thinking that in 2024 that anybody would give a shit about it. You know, we didn't think that way back in those days. You figure, oh, I'm going to do this for, you know, a few years and then I'll go on and do landscape photography or something. You know, I didn't think I'd be, there was no, when I started, there wasn't really this job called scape photographer, you know, that you could make a living off of. And then I just kept doing it. And then all of a sudden, oh, I'm getting paid for doing this. And then, oh, I'm teaching other people to do it too. And they're making money. And then, oh, we're having kids and buying houses. And you just, it's just so abstract, yes, you know, to think that there was no job as scape photographer. It's like now there is no, that job as magazine scape photographer, really.
Right, right. You
know? It's, well, gone. It's all, you're an Instagram photographer now.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, this brings me to my, you know, to my last question. You know, you are there at the ground floor of skateboarding really coming into its own. You know, you've got Ty Page and all that stuff before, but you've got it really coming into its own. And you are a documentarian of that, for better or worse, you know, however you feel about that. You have a very tremendous legacy that is incredibly unique, the position you're in. So are you going to be releasing more of your photos from the from that time? And how do you see the future going as far as maintaining your legacy and your art, your photos?
Well, you know, back then I didn't think about documenting. Now I look back at it and unknowingly I was documenting things. And now I look at everything as documentation, you know, because... You know, because there's going to be somebody 20 years from now that wants to look at photos from now, you know, or from, you know, the early 2000s, or because they grew up with it. You know, like there's some kid now, they want to, 20 years from now, they're going to want to see photos from that they had on their wall or on their phone or yeah, whatever. Yeah. And I'm just, I look at it now that I'm more of an archivist and a curator of those. I don't want anything to happen to them. I try to make them available to the skaters, you know. You know, when Christian is always working on something, you know, I'm giving him photos. Say he's doing an article for a magazine or whatever, I'll give him photos. I don't really care about getting paid for it because, you know, he's Christian Soy. And you'll, things might come off of that, you know, somebody, a company or something might see a photo and then they, maybe they want to pay me for the photo. But I am like a curator and an archivist. I'm an archivist of my photos. Cause I don't want to, you know, I recognize it as a piece of history and I don't want anything bad to happen to them or, you know, say they go into, you know, it's like the end of Indiana Jones where everything gets wheeled out into the,
yeah,
you know, I don't want that to happen. I want them to be available. And so at least the skaters can get them, you know. So, yeah, you know, I've talked to my kids about it and I'm sure everything will be okay when I'm gone. You know, my daughter, she's just like, Dad, don't worry about it. I got it covered. I know how important all this is, you know,
right on.
As a piece of history.
It is.
Know? There's some people you can't get their photos right now. You know, they either died and weren't, they didn't have everything collected together, or, you know, they're just, you'll just never see it again, you know, and I didn't want that to happen.
Well,
and then as far as my own projects, I'm working on another book right now. It's just starting out. It's related to Tony. Somebody else is doing it, but it will be all my photography and be all Tony Hawk photos. And so we're working on early stages of working on that. And, you know, just working on a lot of different things. I make a living off of my archive, you know, selling prints, and I do shows. I did that show in Athens, Georgia, which was one of the best shows that I ever had. And we did a slideshow at the theater and the book signing. And I mean, I'd always wanted to go to Athens, Georgia because of the music connection. And then I just got, November, I had a show in Madrid, Spain, and did a slideshow and a book signing there. So, you know, it's just, I'm having fun.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. And we were so happy to have you here. Real quick, what were your impressions? I know that you went out to Johnny Gordon's and shot out there. Mm-hmm. What was your impressions of the skate scene here?
Just craziness. You know, that was one of those things you go, well, they have this tiny flyer, the tiniest flyer in the world. And it's like in something like in honor of Grant Britain's photo show in Athens, they have this event, you know, like a party. And there's probably 30 people skating and probably, you know, 100 people there all drinking beer and just raging pretty much. And, you know, backyard bowl ramp. And I mean, it was amazing. It reminded me of like the 80s and the 90s, you know, where you would just all these friends and locals just show up and skate. And I shot photos and got a few good pictures of people I didn't even know, you know, and then they had that downhill session, you know, in town. And that was amazing. And then Jason Thrasher just took care of me. He and his wife, Beth, took care of us the whole time. It took my wife there. I mean, they were like, oh, it was the best. Like when I hear about, you know, hospitality, that's what you hear about. You know, I mean, that's what we experienced when we were there.
Well, that's right on. And, you know, Jay, yeah, they're such wonderful people and, you know, so talented as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know how I met Jason? Do you know how I met him? So I was in the 80s. I was with Ray Underhill and I think Britt Parrott and maybe Brian Ridgway. And we went after the Louisville contest. I think this is when we went to Nashville and to Huntsville. And in Huntsville, we went to that underground park. And Jason was a kid skating there and my camera broke and he gave me a ride to the camera store to get a new camera. And
that's
then
awesome.
So he's probably in high school, I would say. And then he picks up, he says it's because of me, but he picked up a camera there and became a photographer. And now is this rad portrait photographer, commercial photographer.
Yeah.
He ends up moving to Athens. And then he and his wife open up, you know, the Francisco Gallery there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ace Francisco Gallery. And then he asked me over a year ago if I wanted to have a show there. And I go, yeah, sure. And then it all came from there. And we got sponsors for it. And he rigged, you know, got the CNA thing going and the bookstore and Avid bookstore and all that, you know, hooked up, and we got other sponsors and yeah, it was incredible. I mean, the way it all came together, it was probably the best event I've ever had, you know.
Well, I tell you, we put a picture up of me and you on Instagram when you were at Cine, and you know, I interviewed bands and stuff, but I got more messages that night, like, oh my God, you know.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, it was just great to see the town, you know, open the red carpet for you know, you're definitely a Athenian, an honorary mm-hmm. Athenian now. So you'll have to come back.
Yeah, no, I want to. If he ever does it, wants to do it again, I'll do it.
Right, right.
But,
well,
but I rival that trip is up there with any trip, pretty much. I mean, good food and, you know, no, I had a great time, met some great people, met some other artists there and other photographers and painters and musicians and, the whole REM connection and B-52s, and I was into all that. So that's, it's one of those towns you want to go to, and it's kind of a bubble in the South too.
It really is. I mean, it's
Yeah,
why I
it's
moved
like,
here.
yeah, you don't know you're in the South until you get outside of town.
Right. You learn
Yeah.
you get now you very quickly get into the South. Let me just
Yeah,
when you get
yeah.
to, but no, we love it here. It's a beautiful artistic area. We used to drive down here and just go street skating when I was a teenager
Rad.
in the 80s.
Cool.
Well, Grant, it's such a pleasure for you to talk to you today. Thank you for all your time. Is there any, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you and to act, buy prints, get the book?
Yeah. You can get prints through jgrantbrittonphotos.com. That's where I have my shop, and I have a gallery and a blog online. And then the books you can get through Ginkgo Press. There's other ways to get the book too. You can get signed books from Grounded, which is a shop here in Encinitas, and they're online. They're called Shop Grounded, and got signed books. And then the Barnes and Noble in Encinitas, you have to call them, but they've got signed books too. I don't really sell the book myself. I didn't want to deal with all the shipping and everything, but
Yeah.
or just look for me next time, I'm doing a book signing someplace,
Well, for me, and I'm sure everybody else, thanks so much for changing our lives with your
Sure.
artwork. It it it
Yeah.
it was like I said, it was a view into the cool, man. And
Well, that wasn't the plan.
well,
I didn't want to change anyone's life. I wanted to turn people on to skateboarding and photography and skateboard photography, and that's all I really cared about, I
Well,
mean, it's done a lot for me. I mean, it changed my life. Skateboarding changed my life. And people say, when people say, "Hey, skateboarding saved my life," and I believe it,
yeah,
Yeah.
I totally agree. Well,
Yeah.
thank you so much for coming on today, and we'll talk. Hopefully, we can talk to you again when you get the Hawk book done.
Okay, great. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you.
I was honored. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
I'd like to thank J. Grant Britton for being on the Ratio podcast. I mean, it was a thrill of a lifetime for me just to talk to that cat, and I'm proud to call him a friend now. I would urge you to go out and get Push, the book he mentions in the interview. It is really a trip down memory lane, and it will spark so many memories in your mind. So many things will be firing. And also go check out Jason Thrasher's artwork, his photography. It's amazing. You can find him through us. I would imagine somehow we'll put a link up, or you can find his website. Just Google Jason Thrasher. I'm sure his work will come up immediately. And that's our show for tonight. Make sure and go see Pylon Reenactment Society, and make sure and go see Tears for the Dying on the Road. And welcome to anybody who is now a listener of the Ratio podcast. We are so stoked and happy that you are here. And once again, everybody, thanks so much for letting me continue to do this. We have got a wild season planned for you, and I'm as excited about this as I was when I started it, if not more. So we've got a lot of cool stuff coming down the pike this year for you. So stay switched on, and we'll talk to you soon.